Friday, March 6th. Welcome back to Damon Bruce Plus, streaming with Thinking Out Loud, Sam Batesh. Once again, dude, it's been too long. How are you, pal?
I'm doing so well. And it's so funny that we're doing this about NFL free agency today, because my world has changed so much since you and I mean, just think about even the days in the Bay Area at KMBR, 1999, 2000, just we're so focused on the NFL, and that's how we should be at all times almost. The idea that I woke up today and truly is, and all I'm thinking is NHL trade deadline is happening here. We're an hour off of it.
Yes.
And then you and I start talking free agency, and I just think to myself, yeah, like that's where my brain has always been. And of course I was interested if the Flyers made a move over the years, but it's just amazing how the world changes that quickly.
Hey, I'm going to be monitoring some Sharks news today.
Yes,
do something for a team that's on the edge of doing this or not.
This is Kings and Sharks. Like whichever team makes a move here in the next hour, like that's going to be the difference. Those are the two teams battling it out for that last spot.
Meanwhile, welcome everyone. It's great to have you here. Thanks so much for stopping on by. We want to remind you, as always, Ike's birthday month is officially underway.
That's great.
Special sandwich deals to be had each and every Thursday this month, concluding on March 26th, which is Ike's actual birthday. On March 26th, you buy a sandwich, you get a second sandwich, any second sandwich, for $4.80, since he's going to be turning 48, that young whippersnapper.
Good for him.
Just the day before, I'm turning 51, so I'm 25th, he's a 26th. Sammy, when's your birthday?
I'm an October 16. I'm a Halloween month baby. You know, I like the black and orange is something I follow a lot, you know, which I know with the Giants made a lot of sense.
It works.
But I like the black and orange. But October 16th, a Libra for those that give a shit about that as well. But yeah, truly. I'm excited. 48's a good year. I will say that for right. 48's solid year of your life.
Good year. It's the very last time you can actually say you're in your late 40s, because once you're 49, you're more than late 40s. But anyways, thank you to the Dubliner West Portal. Again, go get yourself the best pulled Guinness in all of San Francisco at the Dubliner West Portal. West Portal is one of my favorite spots and just spots in the whole city. It's a great block in San Francisco that doesn't get the shine that it actually should. The shine that the NFL gets is pretty much ever present. And I really hate that we are in a weekend where I suggest to everybody, just get off your phone.
Yep.
It's going to be nothing but rumors until Monday. And here's what I hear. And here's what I hear. If I hear another Max Crosby is rumored to be traded to this team, I mean, I've been reading this story since week 17, and Pete Carroll sat him down against his wishes. We all know he might want to be traded. We all know he might not get traded. No one knows what happened. I don't need another story about what might happen when we are so close to things actually happening, when the tampering period, Sammy, starts on Monday. And then on Wednesday, free agent dollars officially start flying.
And Siciliano used to teach me, you know, it's not really tampering. There's like this legal, in other words, legal tampering is sort of an oxymoron, he was saying, right? Like legal tampering, if it's tampering, then it's not legal, et cetera. But there is a window that opens and this is all fine. I will say my favorite time in all of this, Damon, is exactly this. The make it up, the fantasy ridiculousness of choosing somebody to go somewhere else. That's actually my favorite time is right now. Forget about the facts. Let's go as wild and ridiculous as we can. I mean, here, looking at quarterbacks in ridiculous places. Hey, Micah Parsons, imagine if he was on the Packers. Wait, what? It happened? I mean, that's still the fun time to say this out loud.
Kruger actually, not just thinking out loud, like and subscribe everybody. But Kruger and I were just laughing at, there was some parody account that says the Jets are thinking about flipping the 10th pick in the draft of the Niners for Mac Jones. Like no chance. No, that's just someone looking for some online attention. That's not.
And we have now volleyed it. And we've now volleyed it one step up the ladder as well. Right. You said it out loud. It is real now. Like that's all it takes. Someone used to tell me, you know, obviously I worked a long time at Fox, at CBS as well. And producers used to ask me, Sam, is everything breaking news? Like, is it all really breaking news? We have to say breaking news. I said, you know what breaking news is? Whatever we say it is. I said, because the minute we say it or write it, it's breaking. Like now the world is going with it. Now it is. Yes, we are the gatekeepers right here.
That's the reason why you're not allowed to tell April Fool's jokes anymore.
Yes.
Because legal has said, wait a minute, there are too many people listening to us for information. And the world is now full of basically 8 out of 10 people are idiots and will believe anything they hear. So even on April Fool's, stop making shit up.
Yes. Watch out. Watch out. But this is the fun time. This is the fun time.
You've gotten that email. Careful with your practical jokes.
It's very true. But this is the time when it is nice to fantasize about a couple of things, because here's the nice part. There are quarterbacks that will be on different teams. You and I are not making shit up. There are starting there is a quarterback making $50 million that is likely not going to be on the same team anymore. I mean, this is real. This is very, very real. This is going to happen. The guys that play the most important position in football, a guy that you once dreamt would win your team a Super Bowl, is going to be on another team tomorrow. That's how quickly it's going to happen.
If you thought that Kyler Murray was going to be the future of the Cardinals, they're restarting their future right now. We'll get to that. But what I do want to say, and this is something that Kruger and I were talking about, is that the holes that the 49ers, the holes that any NFL team starts filling in free agency, is going to really dictate what they end up looking at in this upcoming NFL draft as well. Mock drafts that come out before free agency really are a waste of time, because it is just restacking the priority deck for every single franchise, Niners included. Like, if the Niners are really thinking about John Franklin Myers and taking him off the top shelf of free agency from the Denver Broncos, well, then guess who won't be looking defensive line at 27 in the first round? Guess who won't be looking D-line probably with their second pick either, with all the needs that the 49ers have? So the move or deal that is done next week impacts every mock, every way of thinking, every draft board in the NFL. So let's stop putting the cart in front of the horse.
And again, credit to Roger Goodell. Love him or hate him, what he did with the calendar, when he fluffed the NFL calendar up a few years ago and just put something every single month that would dictate significant change for your team, that was a brilliant move. When you can give fans every single month within their brain an opportunity to think their team is viable for a Super Bowl, you've done something special. Most teams get to November. Most teams have to spend November, certainly December and January, thinking their team may not have a chance. Then anyone that makes the playoffs is thinking in January their team can win a Super Bowl. And then as soon as the Super Bowl is done, the clock turns toward, well, this team went from worst to first. And look at the Seahawks, who just won a Super Bowl with Sam Darnold, and all of the things that become, and look at the Patriots going from four wins into a Super Bowl contender in the Super Bowl. That's how quickly this league does it. So two things Goodell has done. Number one, yes, the Patriots can go from four wins to representing the AFC in the Super Bowl in a heartbeat. Sam Darnold can go from being a complete cast-off waste of space in New York into winning the Super Bowl with the Seahawks. It's giving everybody that chance and making sure that the calendar has got a day on it each month that we care more about football than anything else.
Yeah, look, it's the NFL is the heroin we are all addicted to as sports fans. There's no doubt about it. Timing matters. Timing in free agency matters. Timing in a player's career matters. Timing in your competitive life cycle matters. And timing in the competitive cycles of the teams in your own division matter greatly too. That's why the Niners are in a little bit of a beige area here, because yes, they just finished among the final four in the NFC's playoff package. Yes, they just overshot whatever their trajectory looked like it was going to be with all those injuries. But man, oh man, they are chasing two of the lead dogs on the lead lap of football in what the Seahawks, the defending Super Bowl champs. There's really no holes, no regression that they're worried about yet. The disease of Moore hasn't exactly eaten them alive. And the Rams have the reigning MVP, just made a we're going for it trade for a corner that I do think matters. Now, whether he's damaged goods or not, we will see. Let's let the watch, you know, the season play out. But when you look at where the Niners are they closer to the Seahawks and Rams, or are they closer to missing the playoffs? Are they closer to, I don't want to say the Arizona Cardinals, because you don't want to be that close to them, but look at the competition in the West, Sammy. I saw this placard the other day, and I want to share it with you. Mm. The last 15 seasons, the NFC West has been the best. Highest winning percentage, Best point differential, most playoff wins, most conference titles, and most Super Bowl wins. They're tied for second. I mean, the AFC West is represented in that by just the Kansas City Chiefs, three Super Bowls alone. Who is number one? Would it be? Who would that be?
Well, since 2011.
Yeah.
Since 2011, if it's not the AFC West, it's got to be. Is it not? It's not the AFC West for Super Bowl victories.
No, because the Chiefs won three. Which division has won four?
It's okay. So
it can't be the NFC East because it's only the Eagles that have won.
2011, right? Right, exactly. As far as a win, that's Eagles. It's not going to be. Would it be? It's not going to be North. It's not going to be. Let's see. I mean, AFC. No, I mean AFC East. No, I mean could. Yeah, since 2011. Well, wait, since 2011. How's it? It's got to be AFC East. No. This is great. I love this.
I'm Googling this.
While you Google this, I'm going to stay focused while you, because if we both Google it, we're just simply going to sit here and think, and you're going to watch hamsters just moving in our brains.
I want to say AFC East and the NFC East are tied for the most Super Bowl with three division championships in this period. New England, they're still in this conversation.
There you go. Yep.
So that's it. But again,
I thought AFC East. And I was going to say, remember what I said coming out of the Super Bowl and the playoffs. What is this Super Bowl victory by Seattle said one thing to me. This season should be remembered for what happened in the NFC West. The Rams, the Seahawks, and the Niners all played in the last 2 weeks of the season for a shot at the one seed. Really significant shot at getting the one seed. The Seahawks ended up with it. And then to get to the Super Bowl, the Seahawks had to beat the Niners and the Rams on the way there, plus the NFC West won the MVP and won the Super Bowl. That this season was dominated by the NFC West.
If that had happened in the NFC East, the Sports Center would have so jammed it down your throat, you'd be fatter than a goose who they need the foie gras from. I mean,
think about it. The Niners were hosting the Seahawks with a shot at the one seed in week 17. I mean, look at all the maneuvering. The Seahawks had to come back from down two touchdowns and score a two-point conversion in overtime to beat the Rams in a game that swayed that division and, again, would have been the one seed for the Rams and not the Seahawks. So the Seahawks had to beat the Rams and the Niners in drag-it-out games, even though the game in San Francisco turned out not to be that close. But we thought going into it, it would be. Those are the games that swung the entire NFC. That's it. And the Niners beat the defending champs. This was a massive NFC. The NFC West dictated it. And all season, I'm not going to say it was quiet, but no one had, the Seahawks were not in a one seed to the moon all season at all. That happened late. That happened in that Thursday night game against the Rams. That's when it became reality for Seattle. And I still thought, and they did, San Francisco still had the driver's seat and just didn't finish it at home. So this was a remarkable season for the NFC West. When Sam Darnold won the Super Bowl with the Seahawks. And I'm sorry, we're going to say that for the rest of our lives with probably that expression.
Right. No doubt about it. Look, the NFC West officially achieved maximum football this year.
Thank you. Yes, absolutely yes.
Good to have everyone here. Please hit like and subscribe to both Thinking Out Loud with Siciliano and Sam and right here on Damon Bruce Plus. It is great to have you here today. And with free agency, what's the number one name on the board? Who is the free agent you think is the belle of the ball, the guy that every single team should be tripping over on the way to acquire his services? Who's your guy, Sammy?
Not a free agent. The number one name in football, if you're thinking about the future of your franchise and you're looking at the landscape of the news cycle, is Max Crosby. That's the number one name. Considering what happened with Micah Parsons during last offseason, Max Crosby's the number one name and starting to look more realistic. I would have told you a year ago, that's a joke. Right? Micah Parsons was not going to be moved. I said, I hate these training camp stories. Oh, this guy's not in camp. This guy's not. It never becomes anything. And all of a sudden, Micah Parsons gets legitimately traded to a contender in the NFC from the Cowboys of all teams, who I thought they would have been the wild ones making a swing like that. So now that that happened, Max Crosby's a real conversation, whether it's for draft picks or a team that can actually sign him to that money. So that's number one. Outside of that, if you're really talking about the free agency class, I'm just going to go with quarterbacks because I find it most interesting. And I think the audience does. I hope you can certainly find somebody that isn't a quarterback, but I'm still going to say Kyler Murray. If I look at the free agency class of quarterbacks, the guy that I think is interesting, when you look at that class, if you're saying, all right, this guy could actually win games and improve a franchise from where they are currently and make a difference, this guy's an exponential change to a franchise potentially, it's Kyler Murray. He did it exponentially for Arizona. He still has game left, gas in the tank, isn't catastrophically injured. Kyler Murray still could be that guy. I don't know what happened in Arizona. I don't. It happened quicker than I thought it would in this case. There wasn't a lot of new, that came out quietly. Good for Arizona. That was pretty under wraps.
You would think that his career would have ended violently, either with a hit that was violent or a level of bad press that turned the situation into an ugly situation. Neither really happened. And even though Kyler Murray had a rough year, a bad year, we are just 2 years removed from him being a top 10 QBR quarterback, which no one really expected in Arizona, which is always going through whatever metamorphosis the Cardinals are trying to get out of. They're always a team that is, they never reach their change. They're just always changing. And I mean, look, say whatever you want about the Cardinals. He was their biggest threat, their best weapon, their most interesting, all eyes on him, defensive game plan all around him. Level of talent. And, you know, when you look at teams that are desperate to add, where do you think the Kyler Murray fit is? Is it in New York with the Jets? Is it in Minnesota with the Vikings? Is it possibly the Tua replacement in Miami if that decision is made? And that's going to be a very expensive decision for the Dolphins to think about.
In a world where we can make shit up, the Miami thing I love. I love the, because you know that I've been down on Tua this whole time. I just didn't believe, and I just thought the injuries were avoidable with Tua. I thought he put himself in a bad spot. I did. I love that he wanted to go head first into things, but you just can't do that. I mean, with right. what was happening.
You can't go head first when you're concussion prone.
I mean, the bottom line is if you're worth $50 million, you can't go head first, period. That's not an option. It's not. It's not an option. With $50 million without the history, it's not an option. And with $50 million and the history, it's just stupid. So I don't like that at all. And what I didn't like the idea that he wasn't wearing the halo cap. He had a team, Devon Achane, his star running back, the guy that essentially now is more their future than him, wears the halo cap. You got the best player on your team, arguably, is wearing the cap. There's no embarrassment about that. What are you worried about what people think or how you look out there? Are you kidding me? That was reprehensible. So I love the idea that a guy that has similar limitations physically, potentially as Tua does in Kyler, could go there and excel. That would be a cool story for me to see. I also can't deny that when Kyler Murray was drafted by Arizona, I thought, wow, they took Josh Rosen with their first round pick just a season ago. And granted, that says terrible things about who Josh Rosen probably is, but what an all-in position. I mean, way to go with identifying we screwed it up and we're just going to reset it immediately. We're not going to say, no, he could still be our quarterback. Like, we're making this decision now. That's not the guy.
The best time to get out of a bad investment is today.
Immediately.
Loss only compound the longer you stick with a bad stock. So,
and that's not an easy conversation in the room, Damon. You know it. You know there's people that are going to say, no, we didn't make a mistake with Rosen. Nobody wants to be on the stink of Josh Rosen, and everyone's going to think we can save it. But saving it was getting out of it. So that was a bold move.
The only element of the Trey Lance debacle the 49ers got right was the willingness to move on when everything in the world was screaming, it's time to move on. Let's talk a little bit about the new name today that will be among the free agent quarterbacks. Diana Rossini this morning says that the Raiders are going Mendoza at number one, but their preference will be to not play him right away. And right now, the Raiders quarterback room is Fernando Mendoza and Aiden O'Connell, because Adam Schefter reported that Geno Smith is out. Geno is gone. Now, Josh Dubow, who is one of my favorite AP writers to follow, and I love the guy, he says that the Raiders gave Geno $58.5 million and traded a third-round pick for him. He won two starts and led the NFL with 17 interceptions last year. It was a bad year for Geno. Where Geno lands, who would want him? who is going to Geno in this free agent period? You know he's not going back to the New York Jets, so they're off the board.
You know where I love him? I could see a world where Seattle has him back. I could see that. I could see in a world where he backs up Darnold. I know they got a young quarterback there behind Darnold, but I could see that. I could see him being in camp with the Seahawks. That's certainly interesting. Depending on what happens with Mac Jones, I don't hate it in San Francisco either. I could see Geno Smith being a guy that makes sense for a team that knows there's going to be a couple of games without Brock Purdy. And as we said about Mac Jones all season, if you think about a guy who can handle 4 to 5 starts, Geno Smith was very good in Seattle as a starter, but he was almost even better as Russell Wilson's backup. He was tremendous coming in for a short stretch of games in Seattle. That's what got the confidence back up around Geno. So him going back into a role like that, I could see. I also can't deny that what I saw with the Raiders, here's one thing I don't know how to do, and Larry's better at this, and you're better at this than I am. I don't know how to unpack a bad offensive line and what I'm seeing happen on the field. So for instance, Saquon Barkley has a wildly different year this year for the Eagles, right? And you're like, oh, the tread on the tires from the 2,000-yard season made a difference. If you really go back and look at it, no, the offensive line of the Eagles was simply not as good, injured, maybe Mekhi Becton being on, who knows? Like, there's any series of things that happen that make that up. But my eyes, when I'm watching football, it's tough for me to not look at the guy throwing the ball and the guy running the ball and just saying that somehow there's a difference there. To really get in the trenches and understand the dynamics of where, unless you are tragically bad on the offensive line, it's really tough to see that as a fan.
Quarterback is probably among the hardest quarter positions to evaluate coming out of school, because is this quarterback not playing well because of the offensive line, or is he playing better than he really is because of the talent around him? Everyone says that the quarterback needs to elevate the talent around him, but quite often the opposite is happening. And that's why this position, which is the most coveted, talked about, examined, studied, developed position in the world, there's never more than 20 dudes who are good at it professionally in any one year.
That's it. And it's a violent conversation. When you talk about the top 10 and leave somebody out of it, I mean, it's a violent conversation. People want to get that upset and angry about it because of how much the position matters. So when you look at Geno, you're telling yourself, okay, was he awful? Considering how good he was for Seattle, was he awful? But then you say, wow, Seattle wins the Super Bowl with Darnold, who's nobody saying is the next coming of Mahomes. So you win it there, and Geno's no longer your guy. And then Geno is terrible on the Raiders. But the same side of that token for me is that Ashton Jeanty didn't set the world on fire, and I was so convinced he would. And everybody's willing to come to Jeanty's defense and say, well, the offensive line was terrible. So does Geno get that same benefit of the doubt when going back to the market? Do the people that know more than you and I, can they decipher and look at the tape and say, no. Geno Smith is simply a guy who didn't get nearly the support he's got in other places, and this is a guy that is still incredibly viable in this league. I'm not sophisticated enough to say that.
I think that the statement, with bad around him, he's bad, with good around him, he's good, applies to everyone in the NFL almost. Yeah. I mean, there is no sport in team sports where the collective dictates individual success or failure. And that is the beauty of football. That's why it really is the ultimate team sport. There is not one guy who can change everything that dramatically like basketball, like the NBA. That's why tanking isn't the worry in professional football the way it's a defined worry in basketball. So it's a great time here. I love the speculation.
And Damon, I want to at least be true to something that you and I both were on a pulpit about. I was thoroughly convinced the Raiders would be a viable team this year. I just want to say that out loud. Go ahead and stamp me with that. Pete Carroll, Chip Kelly, Ashton Jeanty, Geno Smith. Those changes at those positions were so significant and Tom Brady. How could how could each one of those pieces make zero impact?
Right.
Zero.
So I would have said on Brady, what seems to be coming to light now with the latest Mike Silver report.
Yeah, it's a great story.
Where Alex Guerrero is once again the strange bedfellow in the room that no one really knows. You know, why do I got to tiptoe around this dude? He doesn't even work here, yet he has Tom Brady's ear more than anybody. Is he an agent? Is he a spy? What is he? What is this guy? This guy pissed off people in New England. He pissed off people in Tampa. And now he's pissing off people in Las Vegas. What is so there on Alex Guerrero? He was Brady's trainer. Well, you don't need Brady to be in good shape if he's not playing for you. Why do you need Brady's trainer following him around everywhere?
Go back and watch Tom versus Time. For everyone that for anyone who hasn't seen Tom versus Time, that was essentially the self-made. It wasn't self-made. It was. I think did Deepak Chopra? No, Deepak Chopra. But somebody Chopra made that.
Is that the his kiss on the lips with his son lingers for three heartbeats too long?
Yes, exactly that. But it tells the story of how Guerrero is so connected to Brady's nimbleness and frankly just the idea that he's so in shape at this point in his life. It was the pliability. That's what it was. It was the pliability of Brady's body. The way he's avoiding injuries is because of the shape he's in and because of what he's doing, the stretching essentially that he's doing with Alex Guerrero. And you're thoroughly convinced when watching it, yeah, this guy's crucial to who Brady is. But then it was a story and expose came out by ESPN later that was the fissure between Brady and Belichick ended up being Alex Guerrero.
Yeah.
So now to hear that again in Las Vegas, that's a common denominator. And he has a significant job impacting players because apparently he's the guy that told Max Crosby, yeah, you're not playing anymore this season. And that was not Max Crosby feels like he's the guy that walks in a room and says, I'm playing or not. Right. Unless you're telling, right? Unless I'm scrambled eggs in my brain, I'm playing. That's it. Max Crosby makes that decision for himself. The idea that Alex Guerrero did apparently is never going to be something that they can overcome and patch up.
We will see. Speaking of overcoming, patching it up, I don't know if he's come out of his darkness ayahuasca retreat or if he's even gone in, but do you think Aaron Rodgers is another season of football in him?
He's a playoff quarterback. I can't deny that. I can't. And it's so hard to decipher. You know, Mike Tomlin spends no seasons below 500, right? He's got a non-losing streak going like nobody else. So essentially he drags anything and everybody to the playoffs no matter what. But Rodgers was certainly good enough for that. Rodgers was good enough. The problem is Russell Wilson was sort of good enough the season before for that. And you're wondering, all right, well, neither of those guys really do I have tremendous confidence in right now. So what am I really looking at? Rodgers, does he need to stay in Pittsburgh or not? I feel like with Tomlin out, it says that now Pittsburgh can go in another direction. Like Pittsburgh can really find what they thought they had in Kenny Pickett and really say, we need to lean into what the future is going to be. I mean, this is a franchise that has Terry Bradshaw, that has Ben Roethlisberger, right? This is not a franchise. I mean, granted, it's a franchise that also has done things with Mike Tomczak, right? Like, we get it, but Neil O'Donnell is similar. But reality for a team that is as storied and tied to history in the Hall of Fame the way this franchise is, it feels like finding that guy is going to be more important. And Aaron Rodgers is part of one of the greatest stories of hindering that guy becoming that guy in the history of football, right? It happened for him with Brett Favre ahead of him and then with Jordan Love behind him. So you just don't, I don't know that Rodgers is the guy that now a new kid comes in and you're like, man, he just can't wait to dump all of his knowledge into that kid's brain. I don't see that happening.
So, you know, there's talk of who might be the best backup, like a guy like Kirk Cousins. To me, he would be he would want to be more of that mentor role. The I'm not here to prove to you that I'm still the man. I'm the man who can help the kid. Period. I think Kirk Cousins is better in that role. And maybe that's a name that the Raiders look at. I know that there's been talk of Kirk Cousins and Kyle Shanahan getting together for way too many years. I almost think that that's a reason to not bring him into San Francisco to sit behind the minute Brock Purdy has a bad game, the Kirk Cousins noise would get obnoxious. We do know that. Lefty Mo says, Mac Jones's value is plummeting. I do not believe that for a second.
Why? I don't understand why.
Yeah, no, I don't believe it for a second. I think Mac Jones is...
Because of Geno Smith? Why? I don't understand. Who's on the market that makes Mac Jones less viable considering what he just did? Let's rank backup quarterbacks from last season. Jacoby Brissett, 1. Mac Jones, 2. Am I crazy?
I would say maybe it's Mac Jones, 1. Kobe Brissett.
Brissett was like a fantasy viable quarterback. So I give him maybe a little more credit for that, right? Like he had weeks where he set the world on fire. Mac Jones didn't necessarily do that. But Mac Jones might have a more signature win. Mac Jones beating the Rams in LA is the best quarterback backup. It's the best backup quarterback win of the season.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And I just think that, you know, the Niners, again, remember, the media is not your friend. The media sometimes is the market talking to itself, trying to get a better price. There was the 49ers will not trade Mac Jones. That was our first story. Then the story evolved to Niners are willing to listen for big, big ticket items for Mac Jones. And then coming out of Combine Week was there's a softening Mac Jones market. I don't believe any of it. I don't believe any of it. Mac Jones is the right age, the right price point, the right demeanor for a lot of teams to turn to, either as a bridge to get them to where they want to go, or as maybe, hey, he's finally coached up enough. You give him the right spot. Maybe this is a starting NFL quarterback the way that Sam Darnold was doubted and then proved and then was doubted again and then proved it emphatically this postseason run. So I think that there is an awful lot of interest in Mac Jones, and I do believe he will be traded for draft picks. I think the Niners need to do that given their multiple number of needs. They need as many picks as they can get in this upcoming draft. By the way, a couple of supers are in here. Rita Thomas says, DB, this live chat is sponsored by the 49ers Ronnie Lott Medical Clinic. Go Ronnie Lott Medical Clinic. It's something that the 49ers spent way too much time in this year. Steve Lewis says, what do you think of Mekhi Lemon's Combine Media Day? Well, let's talk a little bit about that because he was viewed as one of the more intriguing, more interesting wide receivers, but apparently his Combine interviews left some to be desired. I don't believe the information that comes out of the Combine really anymore. I think an awful lot of it is over-prepped. I think there are some guys who go into meetings to maybe scuttle interest at times. I think that no matter what comes out, look at it this way. Let's say I sat down and I had a meeting with a player that I really, really wanted to draft. The message I would be sending to the media would be that guy sucks.
Yeah.
That guy's going to be easier for me to draft. The more negativity goes out than no team comes out. You ever go buy a car? The last thing you want to do is walk into a dealership and start jumping up and down and clapping next to the car that you want to buy because you are just, you're not getting a break on that.
Nope.
So I don't believe what comes out of the Combine as much as I used to.
No, I guess at this point, the reason the Combine becomes really fascinating for this draft is because of Shedeur Sanders. And sorry if I'm the guy that brought Shedeur Sanders up when we weren't going to otherwise, but everybody was that shocked. The industry was turned upside down during last season's draft. The history of mock drafts will forever be changed based on Shedeur Sanders. Mark my word. Last year's draft changed the term draft expert forever. Forever. And the news coming out of the Combine was Shedeur Sanders is not impressing a lot of people. The interviews aren't going great. And everybody took that to mean he's Deion's son and perhaps he's got a chip on his shoulder. But the reality of that conversation is that Shedeur Sanders in the room and on the board was not necessarily as impressive as other guys. So that matters. Now, Mekhi Lemon is not going to the whiteboard. So that's where, Damon, I think we have room within this story to say, all right, you can just say a guy didn't have the right attitude, et cetera. Different at quarterback. At quarterback, you're really running through a quiz. It's not Wonderlic, but that is a test. It's kind of like a job interview where everyone just says, oh, yeah, no, you know this guy. I know that guy. You'd be great for this job. Or a job interview where they tell you, hey, you know what? We're going to talk again in 2 weeks. And in that time, we'd like you to create a deck about everything that we do here at our company and sort of pretend that you're presenting to clients in the future. And you're like, oh, shit. Okay, that's like a real assignment that I got to do pretending I'm working for you. That's what quarterback has to do. And everybody else has to just say, yeah, you know, I grew up, I'm a real team guy. You know, like you can bullshit your way at other positions. At quarterback, they're putting you on it. You've got to pretend you've got the job and sit in front of NFL coaches that you've never been around before and prove it in that room, in that moment. It's how Baker Mayfield went to number one in that draft. He apparently impressed everybody at the Combine in that room. Shedeur Sanders didn't, and he didn't drop a little bit. He plummeted.
No doubt. No doubt. Look, it is great to have everyone here. Hit like and subscribe. There are a few other things that I want to get to with Sammy today that aren't just NFL, aren't just free agency, aren't just Mac Jones. But again, Lefty Mo comes up and saying, name a team. Nobody can. Miami trading for Mac? Jets? Nope. And what else did he say here? What do you mean? Nope. You don't know that. You have no inside information. He's like, the Vikings aren't going to be interested. Well, yeah, here he is. The Vikings aren't going to be interested because they're going to take Kyler Murray. You don't know that. You don't know if Kevin O'Connell is looking at Kyler Murray as a guy that he wants to work with at all. Where Frank Reich runs a spread. He's now with the Jets. Maybe Murray fits that. There's way too much you don't know shit to make any bold declarations. And here's the deal. If the Niners are unable to trade Mac Jones, then they step into next season with more Geico insurance sitting behind their starter than any other team in football. And that's not a bad thing either.
By the way, how was the quarterback room in San Francisco this season? You ended up needing Mac Jones, and he did everything you could have ever wanted. The most disappointing loss of the season outside of the Seattle game at home late in the season was the Jacksonville game that Brock Purdy played in when he probably shouldn't have. That was the game that I would say, really, if the Niners are beating themselves up about a game that could have made a difference. And you and I like to say that the out-of-conference games don't matter, but in the end, if it came down to one, that was the weirdest game of the season. It was. And that wasn't Mac Jones's game.
One more thing for Lefty Mo here. He says, it's been reported.
Thanks.
Don't believe the reports. There are no reports. It's not a headline until a contract has been signed or someone has been traded. This is lying season. The last thing teams are going to do is jump up and down about the car they want to buy. The report is not your friend. It is not giving you information. As a matter of fact, it could be giving you disinformation. Come on, dude. What are you, a teenager, Lefty Mo? Do you want to know how this works?
I actually look at the entire landscape of free agent quarterbacks. Is there a definite starter in that group?
Here's the thing. You know, Malik Willis for $30 million? Malik Willis was a really good idea at $15 million. For $30 million, it's a bad idea. I don't give a shit about how well he played in five quarters of football or whatever he did. You know, like I would much rather have Mac Jones for a fraction of that price than Malik Willis on a $30 million prove it deal. Good God.
I just don't know of a guy on this list that you're saying going into the season. Yeah, I mean, are you more excited than Mendoza about any of the free agents? No. No. Mendoza is a rookie QB I'm more excited about than any of the guys at free agent. And that's not always the case. It's not. But I'm absolutely more excited and feel like more wins, even with the Raiders, than any. This group does not excite me. Because I have to admit at this point that Kirk Cousins is more a figment of my imagination than he is in wins and losses.
Totally.
Kirk Cousins threw for 500 yards. He did. He threw for 500 yards in a game I can remember. I can remember it not so long ago. Last season, it happened.
And then it was nothing but interceptions and pain.
That's it. I can't go there anymore. And that's probably the guy that has the most automatic wins in him. I still think Kyler Murray is a ceiling guy. The floor is bad, but he's a ceiling guy.
By the way, San Bruno Mike here has been a member for 26 months. That gets a little golf clap right there. Thank you very much, San Bruno Mike, for all the support. That's the old trick you use when you don't want to share food. You say, oh, that's nasty. Don't try that. Then you just serve yourself. But look, I keep on telling Jack, I'm like, Jack, when you got something you don't want to share with Ozzy, stop talking about how awesome it is. Like, stop throwing it in his face. Like, if you want to play with a little toy and not have your brother try to rip it out of your hands, don't hold it over your head. You know. So anyway, speaking of the brothers, let me tell you, Sammy, the old saying, it's so true. Sometimes a cliche only becomes a cliche because it's true, right? If you want to make a hockey fan, take them to a hockey game. My boys both think they're Canadian after last week going to their first ever NHL games. And along with my children, 6 years old and 4 years old, my wife was also at her first ever NHL game. And I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you've never been down to a Sharks game? She's like, I came down to like a Pink concert at SAP Pavilion. I haven't been down here for a Sharks game.
Tank.
Yeah. And the first thing she said, she's like, hockey sounds awesome. Love she's that. Like, the way that the puck sounds off the ice, the boards, the way they rattle. She's like, I love the sound of hockey that I never got until I was sitting in a game. And what she also didn't understand is that every single hockey arena DJ is stuck in 1996 or earlier. The only thing I was wrong about was I promised her she was going to hear Freeze Frame by the Jay Giles Band. They did not play Freeze Frame at the Tank. That's the first hockey game I've been to in my life where you don't hear the no Freeze Frame. I was shocked. But yes, the rest of the soundtrack was stuck in the mid-90s, if not earlier. And the boys loved it. Dad, what's a face-off? What's offsides? I had Jack sitting next to me in the middle of the game. He leans over. He goes, Dad, I love you, which means he's having a great time.
Wow. That's the big endorsement. What a stamp that is, Damon.
He loved it. Ozzy, you know, a little bit younger. He was just mesmerized. But his favorite part of the game was when the shark head came down and the guys came skating out.
That counts. That counts. You don't think Bailey gets love here at Crypto? I mean, that's part of it. I mean, when you got a good mascot, that makes a big difference. So that is cool. And when you see a shark come out of the, you know, when the players skate out of that mouth, that's still one of the coolest things that happens in all of hockey. The reason I think hockey translates to kids also is it's sort of the snow and ice effect, especially on the West Coast, Damon, right? We don't grow up with ice, snow, the way the rest of the country does. So this is like an opportunity. This is essentially visiting a snow park and the kids have no pressure. You don't have to get on the bunny slope and learn how to ski either. You just get all the benefit of being near the snow without any of that trauma of having to do something new. It's great.
The only pressure Jack felt was, how do I get a ride on that Zamboni? That's what he wanted. Once he saw that there was a fan on the Zambonis too, he's like, Dad, I want to get on the Zamboni. I might know the right people to make that happen. It's certainly in LA.
Let's talk to Zamboni and see what happens. Absolutely. You never know what can happen. Yeah. Levi, my 4-year-old, he still talks about it. Daddy, can we go skating? He thought when he walked on the ice. So before the last preseason game this year, we actually got to go out and walk a little bit on the ice. It's stuck in his mind forever. And like I said, just being like near the cold, that has an impact. And to what Jillian said, yes, the sound of the skates on the ice even just creates this nostalgic feeling. It's unlike anything.
When they dump the bag of 80 pucks on the ice and guys come on out of the locker room.
Warm-ups. Oh my God.
Flappers into the net. It's the sounds of hockey are in a way, you know, as romantic as the crunch of the cleats on the clay when you're walking on a baseball field.
Exactly what it is.
Popping, and it's great. It really, really is.
And just one last thing I'll say is, much like batting practice, you know, if you're a parent, you've heard this before. Taking the kids to batting practice is really the experience of going to a baseball game. That's cooler than trying to get your kids to sit through 9 innings. Go to batting practice and sort of see the players in this calm environment where there's less people around. You can get a little closer and see what they're doing. Not to mention, when a guy goes to bat, what does he get? You know, 5-8 pitches, right? A long at bat is 14 pitches. These guys are getting multiple hacks at it. I mean, it's actually the coolest part. Same exactly what you just said about a hockey game. All the pucks on the ice and the guys skating around a lot of times without their helmets. It's this calm atmosphere. It's very cool to take kids to something like that before a game.
By the way, let me just say the Warriors won a good one last night in Houston. Kevin Durant, great player. He's no leader, and that game absolutely proved it. The Warriors are now 2 games over .500. Their season, though, feels very over. They are stuck in the beige more than they are a black and white team right now. And until Curry comes back, it doesn't feel like anything really matters. But, you know, everyone likes to dump on LeBron, what he is, what he isn't. Man, I just saw him have like a very quiet 22, I think he had against the Warriors. Jillian and I were at the Warriors Lakers game the other weekend too. And, you know, here's a guy who didn't have a big game. Then you look at the end of it and he's like, oh, he's the game's second leading scorer. He did have a good game. He is LeBron James. Well, last night, LeBron passed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the most field goals made in NBA history, 15,838. Kareem had 15,837. And look, you know, the whole concept of the game is put the ball through the hoop. No one has put the ball through the hoop more professionally in the NBA than LeBron. It's, you know, whether you like him or not, it doesn't even matter anymore. This guy has been unbelievable. My question, because LeBron is at the epicenter of all things media at all times. There's no doubt no one outranks him in popularity. If he's in your city, he is the most popular athlete. But let me ask you, as the World Baseball Classic is getting underway here, Sam, as Ohtani hit a grand slam, of course he did, in his debut, who is the more popular athlete in LA, Ohtani or Luka?
So popular is an interesting word. And I would say that Ohtani, there's almost nobody giving you the other side on Ohtani. Because the beauty of it is, when he was with the Angels, you could have said, all right, well, he's not winning. Although that wasn't saddled to him. That saddled more now to Mike Trout. And Ohtani, how can you have more of a positive impact than joining a team and winning the World Series in both of your first seasons with that team? One of which where you don't pitch and you have the greatest hitting season of all time. The next one, when you do pitch, you win games in the playoffs. You're a significant piece of the team on both sides of the ball. You prove to be every bit. You have the greatest game of postseason history because of what you do both as a pitcher and as a hitter against the Mets. I'm sorry. But Ohtani, there just is no stain on it, unless you want to be somebody who's saying that the Dodgers ruined baseball. And even that isn't on Ohtani, because Ohtani's the guy taking less money right now to win World Series and lead the Dodgers. What he's done with his money, other than give it to Ipe, is the most brilliant thing any of us have ever seen a player do. So I don't. There's nothing negative. The Luka thing has one playoff win on its ledger in a five-game loss to the T-Wolves last year in the playoffs. And Luka is now tied to, here's my favorite stat George Stedano told me today. Okay, who's led the league in technicals since Luka joined the league? Pretty obvious answer to Warriors fans. Who's the guy that leads the league in
technicals? That would be Draymond.
Okay, easy answer, right? I mean, anybody, I mean, Price is Right, number one answer on the board, ding, Draymond, of course. Who's number two?
I would have said like Isaiah Stewart of Detroit, beef stew,
sure.
But no.
Sure,
no, it's
sure.
Not, it's got to be Luka.
Luka Doncic? I mean, that would not have even entered my atmosphere.
He's not out there getting technicals because he's hacking on dudes or playing on the edge of, is this a clean play? Nobody bitches more on the court than Luka Doncic. He is in a constant conversation with every single official all at the same time. He talks to the officials more than he calls plays for his own team.
And clearly now what's happening is he's not getting the benefit of the doubt. And that reputation is now on him. So plenty of guys complain. I mean, this move in the NBA is more popular than any shot that somebody takes. This move. That face, the what face in the NBA is the number one. How could you call me for that? Is the number one reaction from anybody. But some guys do it in a way where we're just moving on with our lives. Other guys do it and you're seeing the boom. You're seeing the T signal.
Right.
And that's it. Some guys don't get the yellow light, and some guys do. Some guys get the warning, and other guys don't.
One of the best, here's how we speed basketball games up. It was Nick Wright who said, any player on the court does this, like, let's review to look that. At the,
yes.
That triggers the replay. That a single player does that, because every dude is looking to trigger a replay on every foul now, and it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. By the way, speaking of ridiculous, Vegan Yo, she says Ohtani was complicit and he knew about the gambling. Here's the thing. You might be right. You might be right. But everybody needs a fall guy.
And Chris, credit to him. He's out of it. By the way, he's out of it. And no, now he's won two World Series, and it's like, I brought up Ipe's name right now, but if I hadn't, nobody's saying a word about that.
It won't even be a footnote in his career when it's over. He got away with that.
He did.
By
the way, guess what? He's already in the Hall of Fame. It's done. It's done. That he's the greatest player of all time without question, and that's it. So this is just like a cute story on it. And it's kind of like Brady. Look how Belichick had to eat it and not go into the Hall of Fame immediately. But right. Brady's just going to skate through all that, isn't he? And I think that's going to be the case.
Let's make Brady eat it too.
I feel like that's too much. I feel like that's the step you can't take. And here's why. I think it because of the Tampa championship. I think that fissure between which guy deserved the credit ended right there. Tampa, that first season, Tampa wins it with Brady, whereas Belichick doesn't. And of course, then what happens to Belichick after that, then Belichick, then the North Carolina thing. Like, Belichick now has all of these stories beyond Brady. Brady doesn't have that. And somehow even the stink of the Raiders is falling on his fucking trainer and not him.
Right. The guy's Teflon. He really is. He really, really is. I got a just saying here, Sammy.
Love
and
it.
I know you got
Love
a just saying. Mine is baseball, though.
Okay, let's go.
Since we're talking a little bit of baseball right here, let me just give you a just saying. The A's moving out of Oakland, you know, it sucks for so many reasons. And, you know, I'm not here to tell Vegas jokes anymore because there is a, you know, a baseball stadium coming out of the desert. There really is. So it's going to happen. But just another thing that sucks about the A's leaving Oakland is one of the single greatest baseball players. I mean, here's the thing. His name was being left off the greatness list incorrectly when he was here, but without Oakland and Ricky Henderson talking Ricky Henderson up, I'm afraid that Ricky Henderson is going to be lost to the ages when he is quite literally, there will never be, if you're putting your all-time nine greatest guys on the field, he is your starting left fielder. Sorry, Barry's the DH. Barry is not starting in left field over Ricky Henderson. Ricky Henderson is the greatest left fielder of all time, greatest leadoff hitter of all time, and baseball's greatest weapon the minute his foot was on first base. This is a stat that I saw about Ricky that just made me mad about the A's leaving Oakland. Sporticus shared this with me, and I have to share it. During Ricky Henderson's career, he spent more days as the all-time stolen base leader than he did as not the all-time stolen base leader. That's how quickly he checked that off the list in his career. Ricky Henderson, I hope time does not forget him. And it certainly shouldn't, but they're not going to wax poetic forever in the city of Las Vegas about how great Ricky Henderson was the way they would have in Oakland.
It's such a shame. The memories that you and I have for going to baseball games in Oakland and for what's happening right now, the limbo of this is also terrible, because I would have told you that the Vegas thing was very good news for the A's, considering what has happened to sports franchises in Vegas. And I know the Raiders haven't been winning, but they've hosted a Super Bowl. The building's amazing. I still think eventually that's going to be something. You can't deny what the Knights did in their first season and then winning a cup within the first five seasons and the Aces, et cetera. Vegas is a great hotbed for sports. And I thought that was going to happen for the A's. The fact that we had to just with it, I don't even, the concept of playing a season nowhere is just hilarious for the history of baseball, as you have documented many, many times. Ricky should be remembered that way. I love it. My just saying, and he is forever. I have family that's very close, that was very close to Ricky in Oakland as well. And they were just devastated when he finally passed. And yes, Ricky should be beloved and spoken about, as you just said. Right. And will he go down as an all-time great in that way?
He shouldn't be tacked on to the greatest baseball players ever list, because we don't want to forget Ricky Henderson.
No.
He should be in the lead sentence.
Yes.
And by the way, speaking of Vegan Joe, she's like, dude, I just hate the Dodgers. Can't fault me for that. Oh, no. Let the hatred run through you, young man. It's fine. It's
totally part of it. I do get it, but they are absolutely every bit of the Yankees at this point in baseball, and you can't even stop what's happening. It's incredibly impressive. And then Kyle Tucker also, I don't even know what's happening. It's unbelievable.
Overspend.
Fine. Irrelevant in some way. The idea that Mookie and Freddie and Shohei and Kyle Tucker, stop it. Just stop with all of that. Okay. So my just saying.
Yes.
What Ohtani, we brought it up earlier though. The idea that Ohtani hits a grand slam in the WBC when he already has an indelible moment in WBC history in striking out Mike Trout to win it all, has now done this again. He already has a moment. WBC
memory, by the way. What's your favorite BC World Baseball Classic memory? It's the only one I have.
No one gives a shit. No one gives a shit outside of that, right? Like, that's the moment. Japan winning it is the moment for what Shohei did against Mike Trout in that at bat, two Hall of Famers up against one another, and one guy saying, oh, this is the other thing I do in baseball. That other thing I do, that thing I do, my side hustle in baseball is pitching from the mound. That's my side hustle. I just struck you out in the most important at bat, frankly, Mike Trout, that you've ever had in your career. Because you have one hit in the postseason and no wins, and that's not necessarily your fault at all, Mike Trout. And I love what Mike Trout did for the sport, but the reality is that was the greatest stage and the closest he's ever come to winning a championship was right there in that moment. And Shohei said, yeah, I'll do this other thing and still beat you at that. So that's incredible. That's a stamp. And think about some of your favorite players and what they've done on the greatest stage. We're coming out of the Olympics. Carmelo Anthony is probably the most decorated, celebrated Olympic athlete when it comes to basketball, and never sniffed it as far as a championship run as an NBA player for any of the teams he played for. For Shohei Ohtani to have that moment for WBC international play, to have done what he did in Japan, to have another WBC moment before USA even plays a game. There will be players that play this entire WBC won't have a moment like Shohei just had. His first at bat with the bases loaded is a grand slam. Are you kidding me? I don't care who he's playing against.
Of course
it is. And he's coming off a back-to-back World Series championship. He has now stamped. He's a multiple MVP on a team going nowhere when he was with the Angels. Then does it again with the Dodgers and wins the World Series twice. So unlike Carmelo, who can do it on a stage once in a while, Shohei Ohtani has not met a challenge he hasn't crushed. It makes him part of the conversation for the greatest athlete. Forget about greatest baseball player. The argument is over. The greatest athlete in dominating everyone in the history of doing what you currently do. There's nobody that's more of a disruptor in an industry than Shohei Ohtani is for baseball, period.
You know, I will always say that LeBron has had the better career, but Michael Jordan is the greatest apex predator that basketball's ever had. Ohtani is the greatest apex predator and might collect the accolades throughout a career to really check off both boxes. I mean, he is so ungodly skilled and special. I saw his old Japanese manager who's like, yeah, 73 home runs. If he really wants to focus on that, he could do that. Baseball is a sport built on failure. He has no element of failure in his career yet. Not a single day of failure, not a single week of failure, not a single drop off in any category other than he got hurt so couldn't pitch for a while. He was still out there parking the ball.
Stealing bases. Well, he couldn't pitch. He's like, all right, well, I can't pitch. I got to do something else. All right, I'll just steal 50 bases.
Yeah, we'll go 50-50.
What? What?
Today in history. Sammy, as you know, we always start with happy birthdays. Happy 80th birthday to David Gilmour of Pink Floyd. Gotta have
that.
You go listen to the Comfortably Numb guitar solo live. It'll make you shiver every time. Happy birthday to actor John Cove. He's 80. Do you know who John Cove is? It's John Kreese of Cobra Kai. Put him in a body bag. That is the sensei from Cobra Kai turns 80 today. Happy birthday to Tom Arnold, who is famous for sleeping and marrying Roseanne Barr at the age of 67 today. He is 67. D.L. Hughley is 63. I've seen his stand-up. Very funny guy.
Very funny, D.L. Good for him.
Shaq, 54 years old today. Doesn't it feel like Shaq should be older than 54?
Yes.
He's only 54. Tyler, the Creator, is 35, and we don't do a lot of posthumous birthdays, but today would have been Rob Reiner's birthday, and that ending was so...
That one hits hard for many reasons.
That hits. Today in 1836, the Battle of the Alamo was won by overwhelming Mexican forces, and if you can't remember the Alamo today, when can you?
You've been there in San Antonio, right, Damon?
I have not been to San Antonio. I've never been to San Antonio.
So San Antonio, the Riverwalk, a Spurs game. Like now Wemby's doing what he does, I would say like not a bad, like really a fun part of Texas, certainly. I mean, Texas to me, Austin is awesome. Going to the game at Jerry's in Dallas was very cool. And visiting and seeing the Alamo for the history of that. I mean, in the United States, is that like, is there a more interesting when it comes to sort of like war zone? I mean, the Colosseum in Rome is like number one in the world, certainly for seeing something and saying like, indelibly, we know what happened in that building. But the Alamo is fascinating. Like to define it with one particular spot, the Alamo is a pretty cool one.
It's why Ozzy got arrested for peeing on it. It's sacred ground, man. That's sacred ground. It really, really is. By the way, did you get a tour of the basement?
So, no, I did not. No, sure. I did not.
Okay. Today in 1896, Mendeley, he wrote a paper called The Dependence Between Properties of Atomic Weights and Elements. It was presented at the Russian Chemical Society, and it was the very first time that we have ever seen a periodic table. And I will say this, I took one look at the periodic table in like seventh grade and realized I'm not going into science. I don't get this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It didn't take very long.
No, I was good on the memory for that for a while. I was good with remembering things, but no, it did not stick the way I wanted it to.
Today in 1899, Bayer registered aspirin as a trademark, and aspirin was considered to be the world's first wonder drug. So there you go. Happy birthday, aspirin. Today in 1924, the Egyptian government opened the mummy case of King Tutankhamun.
Tutankhamun, yes.
Tutankhamun. Today, we don't get Steve Martin's King Tut without this very moment. But, you know, obviously it got discovered in 1922 by British archaeologist Howard Carter. By the way, everyone who was in the room when it was discovered and everyone who was in the room when it was opened, like everybody died a mysterious death. Just throwing that out there, whatever that means, everyone died mysteriously.
Hold your breath.
Yeah. Careful. Don't breathe that in. Happy birthday, I guess, Jolly Green Giant. Today in 1930, General Foods started putting out individually packaged frozen food, and we get Bird's Eye frozen foods today on sale for the first time in the 30s in Springfield, Mass. So get your spinach up, everybody. Happy accidents. Today in 1950, Silly Putty was introduced as a toy by a guy named Peter Hodgson. He became very, very rich when he introduced Silly Putty to the market. The putty was accidentally invented years before in an effort to make a synthetic plastic. So what was seen as a failure, this doesn't work, turned into somebody else's gold mine. There you go.
Brilliant. Just brilliant.
Put it in an Easter egg and sell it to kids when in doubt. Ooh, today in 1964, maybe the most significant moment, certainly in today's history in sports, Elijah Muhammad officially gave Cassius Clay his Muslim name, Muhammad Ali.
If the man wants to be called Muhammad Ali, God damn it, I will call him Muhammad Ali.
There you go. Thank you very much. Going straight up right out of the barbershop in coming to America. Yeah. You want to talk about an age that doesn't exist anymore. Imagine if there was one newsman so trusted, no matter how you lean politically, you thought that's the guy who's going to give me the truth. Today in 1981, Walter Cronkite resigned as the main anchor of the CBS Evening News. We don't even trust news. Can you even name a national anchor anymore? Sadly, I can't.
No. When I hear Cronkite, I think of Edward R. Murrow, and it's pretty, that's it.
I just think of Cronkite taking his glasses off, doing the Kennedy announcement, like touching his eye. And that was about as dramatic a moment that has ever been offered up in news. That's a moment. Speaking of moments, today in 1985, We Are the World was recorded. We Are the World there's a documentary on Netflix called The Greatest Night in Music. Worth your time of how they recorded We Are the World. Before they recorded We Are the World at night, Lionel Richie, who, by the way, like helped write and produce that song with Quincy Jones, hosted the Grammys. He won several Grammys in the Grammys that he was hosting, and then went and recorded We Are the World. I don't think anyone had a 24-hour run in music quite like Lionel Richie did that night.
That song touched my childhood almost like nothing else.
It was omnipresent.
Yeah, it just, I mean, I just, it's like the soundtrack of my childhood in a way.
By the way, today in 1987, you can't get the 80s without Lethal Weapon being released in theaters tonight in 1987.
Still, by the way, there's a part of that that really holds up and is really hard hitting and dramatic. The beginning of that movie, by the way, for those that forgot about it, go back and watch just the opening sequence of Lethal Weapon.
What is the opening sequence in Lethal Weapon? I can't even remember what it is.
It involves cocaine and the roof of a car. Okay. And nudity. And nudity. Yeah, it's actually quite powerful.
And then in Lethal Weapon 2, you get Patsy Kensit.
Yes.
Who had some powerful nudity in that as well. Didn't she go on to date one of the Oasis guys?
I think you're right. Yeah.
By the way, today in 1998, it's now 28 years old, The Big Lebowski released in theaters. In the parlance of our times, man, that was a good movie. Finally, how much did you download illegally on Napster?
So rarely, frankly, I didn't do a ton of it. I wasn't as tied to music at that time. However, I love how Napster plays a role in Social Network, the movie, just in telling that story and going back. That Justin Timberlake character is just done so well. That's my, that'll be my hint to Napster always.
You want to go ahead and buy Sam Goody's? The guy changed the music industry forever. Napster began to block the transfer of copyrighted material to its peer-to-peer network today. And in July of the same year, and this happened in 2001, in July, Napster shut down its entire network. The lawsuits were there. This is kind of a Lars's fault from Metallica, basically. But Napster was a big deal. But again, because I worked in so many radio stations, if I wanted a CD, I would just take it from the radio station, go home, burn it, and then bring it back to the radio station. So I didn't really use much Napster either, but it was.
I enjoyed burning CDs. I was like obsessed with the speed and how fast you could do it. You know, each computer, like that's how I chose computers. How fast could you burn a CD? And that was my currency more than Napster.
Yeah. My pinnacle of cool was having every original record label or original album cover without the parental guidance.
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted stickers without the warning on it. And once, you know, your iTunes started showing you all the album covers, that was like my point of pride. Like I would show that to girls I was dating. I'd be like, you want to see how nice my iTunes is? And then luckily I met Jillian and she's like, yeah, you should just start go digital. F the Dodgers from Vegan Yosh. And we thank you very much for putting that in a super. We thank everyone for their supers today, for watching, for viewing, for hitting like and subscribe, for getting a Guinness at the Dubliner West portal, for eating at Ike's. Sammy, it had been way too long, man. It was great to catch up with you, pal.
I love this, Damon. It is just a beautiful kiss on the cheek for each of us and a highlight of my week.
There it is. I feel the exact same way. Thanks to everyone for watching. We will be back at it next week for sure. Hopefully, Sammy, we will be returning to something that is resembling weekly hookups. I guess I'm going to have to show you how nice my iTunes is categorized for us.
Now that you've teased that, yeah, we've got something.
All right, everyone. Thank you very, very much. And please do remember that sports don't build character. They reveal it. And like that, they're gone. We'll be right back.